Today on Movie World, as we talk about The Running Man, Eternity, and J. Kelly. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And ESD as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings, greetings.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm excited for the soccer tonight.
Hence your t-shirt.
I'm wearing, yes, San Diego FC. No, this way. Here we go. So if you're watching on YouTube, you can see me holding up our my t-shirt, which is San Diego FC. So San Diego got an MLS soccer team this year, which has turned what is a pretty soccer-oriented town, since we lost the Chargers, I guess, into a soccer fanatical town. So they've sold out Snapdragon. We're not going to see it live.
We had a great women's team called The Wave.
The Wave is wonderful. You probably saw me wearing that t-shirt last time. Although that team has been like systematically dismantled by the loss of Alex Morgan. So I hope The Wave continues its success that it's had in the past. But the San Diego team is made the playoffs in its very first season and could be champions. So go San Diego.
Yep.
And we're going to be watching the game after this. So that's Rashmi's way of saying get running.
Yes.
Because we want to be running.
Oh, running. Good segue,
Joe.
You
see what I did there?
I do.
You see, I got up early this morning.
You did.
I had my coffee. So, yes, we are going to jump into our three reviews this week, which are The Running Man, Eternity, and J. Kelly. I think we are going to tackle them in that same order.
Okay.
So let's jump into our review of The Running Man.
Okay, so directed by Edgar Wright, written and based on the original book by Stephen King. And I believe the original movie, The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger, was around 1987.
87, yeah.
This is where a man joins a game show in which contestants allowed to flee anywhere in the world are pursued by hunters hired to kill them. It stars Glenn Powell, Alyssa Benn, Sienna Benn, amongst a whole host of others. And we all saw this movie. Remind me, were you fans of the original Running Man?
Hugely.
Okay.
I haven't even seen it.
Okay.
And the reason I was, again, I think I've spoken on several podcasts about in the 1980s, I was gifted a Betamax video recorder as a child.
That's
it was
right.
An expired format that in the UK because VHS took over. But somebody gave me, as teenage me, a VCR of my very own.
That's
and
right.
With a whole bunch of blank tapes. So this was one of the movies that I pirated. And I watched it over and over.
I think you made me watch that pirated version.
Maybe, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, so that VCR was like a fine collection of movies that Joe loved for years.
Yeah.
All pirated by connecting two VCRs together as a teenager.
Because one of your friends owned a video shop.
Because one of my friends did indeed own a video rental store.
That's right.
And would let me get
remember
loads
those?
Of movies there. So, yeah, remember that when we had to go to the video rental store?
I like that.
Borrow a tape and rewind it and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, so Running Man, I mean, I know it's not a great movie. The 87 one was not a great movie for many reasons, but it had that kind of same mania. It wasn't directed by Verhoeven, but it had that same mania of all of those kind of 80s sci-fi films. And it was a great Arnie vehicle and lots of problems, but it was over the top. It was bonkers. And I loved it. So there we go.
Okay, go. What did you think of this one? Yeah, like that was a big intro with nothing else to follow, Joe.
Okay, so look, I mean, unfortunately, you know, this takes a different take on the material. So The Running Man from the 80s was very loosely adapted.
Directed by Paul Michael Glasser.
Thank you. Okay.
Was the original director.
It took a very different take on the original Stephen King source material. I have not read Stephen King's, I can't remember if it's a short story or a novel, but I have not read Stephen King's novel other than I did research after watching this movie that this one follows that template much more closely. And unfortunately, it kind of didn't work for me. I don't know whether there was, I'll briefly kind of say where it kind of fell down. To me, it was all in Edgar Wright's tone and direction. I think his particular blend of irony that works so well in, you know, Shaun of the Dead and all of these kind of other movies that he's done.
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
Last Night in Soho.
does not work with this material. You know, you've got a, you know, the bizarre vocal affect of Glenn Powell's Ben Richards to the weird mishmash of like this 80s camp. You know, we have these dancers in leotards and cars and TV sets, and he overuses music. Like, it doesn't gel into something cohesive. And so it ended up being kind of a frustrating experience. Was I bored? No. But did it, it's just Edgar Wright's take on this material doesn't work. If you're going to go 80s camp, well, it, you know, that's only there because the previous Running Man was from the 80s.
Yeah.
That's, I don't think that's in the source material. So why do it, you know, do something, and it's just, so unless you're going to remake the 80s movie. So the whole thing kind of annoyed me, and I'm kind of heartbroken by that because I was really looking forward to this.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, everything Joe said, I love Edgar Wright. I love, you know, he obviously did the Cornetto trilogy. He did, you know, Baby Driver. He did Last Night in Soho. He's such a consummate stylist, right? Every movie of is dripping with style. And again, I mean, we've seen this with Wes Anderson, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos is at the risk, where they might start to become caricatures of themselves. And this one is all style. And I felt there wasn't enough content. Like, this movie should have been The Hunger Games. And it's not nowhere close to The Hunger Games, right? It's essentially the same story. It's like, you know, people are going to come and kill you, and you're running for your life, right? But I think he's so obsessed with the spectacle in the moment, and there is spectacle in the moment through the entire running time. But it all, to me, didn't add up much. It felt very video gamey to me, and I'm not faulting any of the actors. Glenn Powell is very, very game. It has a nice energy to it, but again, I haven't read the Stephen King novel either, but I've read up afterwards, and the original Stephen King novel is very, very gritty and dark, and it's very contemptuous of authority, contemptuous of fascism, contemptuous of corporations, you know, trying to own everything. And, you know, there's one little bit in the climax, which they don't do in the movie for good reason. We can talk about it afterwards, not on the podcast because it's a spoiler, but it felt like eating a lot of candy to me, and I was still a little bit hungry. So it for me, it's the rare miss from Edgar Wright. I mean, should people go and see it? Absolutely.
No.
If you have 2 hours to waste on the back of an airplane, see it. You know, it's fun. It's fun. And the production design is good. Although too much, I fully agree with Joe, too much reliance on 80s camp, which I wasn't expecting.
So yeah. I watched a different movie to you guys again. So here we go again. Yeah. I love this movie. For me, The Hunger Games meets John Wick, meets Squid Games, perfectly meshed into this entertaining, frantic, dynamic, enjoyable ride. What? And the music was fantastic. And I just was like enthralled at the edge of my seat.
Had you taken a hit of mushrooms like before watching? What?
I love this movie. I had the hugest smile on my face watching the movie. And when I came out, I was giddy. I just love the movie. I love the action. And I love the inventiveness of the recreation of the game itself. I love the hunters. I love the backstory of the hunters. This just totally worked for me.
That's hilarious.
That's the great thing about films.
That's absolutely hilarious.
I was kind of like, why do we have to have another Running Man? What are they going to do? And just again, for
me, I think my fundamental issue was with the character, and He, you know, it's a future society which is extremely authoritarian, and nobody dares speak up. If you speak up, like, you know, you get beaten down.
Yeah, it's so satirical. I get it. The mirror, the holding up of the mirror to what we're going through today.
But he, the lead, is constantly doing things which are stupid, knowing that he's going to get beaten up. And so it didn't register as truthful. Like, you can't be a Robin Hood in a very oppressed society. Right. So maybe the oppressed society needs the Robin Hood more than anyone else. But the way he was behaving in front of authority didn't ring true for me. It felt like too much like he was trying to be a 80s film hero.
Right. But here's why it did work for me, Yazdi, is because the film clearly defined the purpose of the journey.
Sure.
Right?
Right
up front, we know why he's in this situation.
And but that, he seemed unnecessarily irritable.
Really? You know,
yeah. Oh. But he also seemed unbelievably in his situation, right? I think, you know, when... So, you know, one of the reasons I like the original Running Man is it plays on a theme that really works well for me in storytelling, which is, you know, the miscarriage of justice, yeah. right? So in the original movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger is accused of something and then he gets, you know, shanghaied and forced into this game show because he's you know, portrayed to be a criminal when he's not. And in this movie, you know, the Edgar Wright, sorry, the Glenn Powell character, the Ben Richards character, the hero, just seems to be so he's so much of a hero. Like he's got this like strength and heroism that he exhibits, and this disdain for authority, and that it didn't work to me that he was struggling to survive with his family. I think it didn't, you know. So I think it didn't sit well here, and I think. Part of what I couldn't get here was Glenn Powell is working his ass off.
Yeah,
he's so good.
Really is. But it just felt to me like he was given all of the wrong script notes because his version of Ben Richards didn't belong in the world that he was in. I found him very hard to like and very hard to get behind. And I think that was one of the things I struggled about in the movie, that nothing felt believable and no one felt likable. And even though we're supposed to be rooting for him, he came across most of the time as such an asshole that I couldn't. I was like, dude, like, I want them to shoot you. Like, you know, I'm so...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, so, you know, he's in a very, very bad state and he needs money essentially to save his child, right? So it's high stakes. And so he signs on for this video game, but he's constantly behaving in such an idiotic fashion that will immediately... put his risk at being in the game. So why would you, I would be very quiet, at least initially. So it felt like he was being smart-assy, but I understand this is Edgar Wright's universe and Edgar Wright is mischievous and he's smart-assy. So it's like the wrong tone for the right movie.
Right. But I think again, what works for me, and I don't want to be too defensive about, the movie, but I think all the things that didn't work for you are the reasons why it works for me. So this is a guy who's basically,
nothing to lose.
No, he's got nothing to lose, but he's kind of putting a middle finger up and saying, okay, come and catch me then. Let's do this. If you want to do this, then let's do this. And clearly, you know, we again, what worked for me is the purpose is stated at the front of the movie, right? So there's clear purpose. And then again, it felt believable that he's been picked because they show us why he's been picked, right? He hits all of these thresholds of why he makes a good candidate for this game that he ends up ultimately being cast in. So I like that. I like that it's really about, it's again, like I said at the beginning, it's holding a mirror up to the society in some ways that we live in today, an authoritarian and satiricalness and governments and power and, you know, our hunger for watching people on games like Survivor and all of these game shows that we watch, these reality.
Squid show, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I for me, it totally works. So I can sum this one up. I would say rush out, run out and see this one. For me, easily, this was an 8 out of 10. I really love this movie.
I didn't hate it at all. I was very entertained in the moment. I just felt that it had the makings of... I still think about the original Hunger Games, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So in that genre, it's dystopian, it's futuristic.
Yeah,
it's about people having to make horrible life and death choices, but it never registers with the heft of that movie. And I think, honestly, if you have nothing else to do, watch this movie. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I forgot to mention, there is this great little subplot in the movie.
With Michael
about
Cera.
Almost like a TV show called The Americanos, which is clearly based on the Kardashians. I found that hilarious.
But that didn't go anywhere. Just
it
there.
Didn't have to. It was just this kind of like fun piece of entertainment. And again, I think it's holding the mirror up to us to say, look at what entertains you. How easily you guys as the audience are entertained. Look what you...
But I think Edgar Wright was clearly going for like a Paul Verhoeven take.
Right.
You know, like if you like Robot and the dystopian satire, it just landed flat. So,
One other thing I want to say. The other thing which doesn't make me hate the movie, but which annoyed me about the movie is you have pedigreed actors here, right? William H. Macy, he's there for one scene. Colin Domingo is just completely wasted. Michael Cera has a part which I really liked.
That's a lot of fun. Yeah.
But Katie O'Brien, Josh Brolin, they're all just wasted to me. They're like in little bit parts. And I'm like, you have all these wonderful actors, make use of them. So anyway, so my score was 7 out of 10. It's not the best action movie of the year. I say go back and watch the original Hunger Games with Jennifer Lawrence, or better yet, watch The Long Walk. Is that the one we saw?
Yeah.
Which is also based
on... The Longest Walk.
The Longest Walk. Or whatever.
No, it's The Long Walk.
The Long Walk. Okay. Yeah. Which also came out this year, also based on a Stephen King novel. Very similar premise in a future where you get killed when you stop walking. So I thought that movie had a lot more heart to it. But if you want a fun time, 7 out of 10. Go for it, Joe.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess ultimately I couldn't get over the fact that this wasn't the remake of the 1987 movie that I loved so much. So, you know, there is some resistance on my part. But, you know, I think I was more disappointed because it started to use some of the themes and tone of that, right, from the 1980s, then dispensed with it completely. So, look, this was bananas and just not in a good way. It's a complete mess. I tuned out. I was bored. Like, you know, that to me is the biggest crime of all from an action movie. And so I'm going to give this like a 4 or 5. I'll give it a 4 because I'm annoyed. Yeah, I was kind of annoyed.
Joe uses more of the scale.
I was annoyed. I was just like, yeah, you're off the mark for me. All right. Movie number 2 then. Let's talk about Eternity. So Eternity was directed by David Frayn and features Elizabeth Olsen as Joan, a woman who finds herself in an unusual afterlife setting that functions like a transitional holding space. Marla plays her longtime husband, and the story blends elements of romance, memory, and metaphysical design while exploring the decision she is asked to make under extraordinary circumstances. What did you both think of Eternity?
I think this is a really sweet, charming, interesting question.
I really enjoyed it. It's totally down my alley because it's a rom-com at heart, but it's also set in this future dystopian world. Well, it's not a future dystopian world.
No, it's not dystopian world. It's set in like...
It's set in the afterlife, right? It's set in the afterlife. And I kind of like those movies. Yeah. And it's kind of... The afterlife is very bureaucratic and it's not very funny. It's not at all what you would expect. So it's kind of completely my jam. But ultimately, I think there was a little piece of it which was missing. There's something missing about the movie. And I think I know what, at least I sense what it is. But again, it's a totally harmless film.
Yeah. It's cute.
Yes, it's very cute. And Randolph Joy, what's her name? Devine Randolph Joy.
She's fantastic.
Who won an Oscar, right? She was nominated for an Oscar for The Holdover. She's in this movie and she steals the whole movie. She's so good in this movie.
Yes. All of the ideas and concepts about what happens when you die are really interesting. And it brought to mind, there was a great show, I can't remember where it played, but it was with Maya Rudolph and Fred Armisen. And it was called Forever. I think it was on HBO. Mm. But it's about a couple who basically find themselves dead in the afterlife. And it's a series version in some ways of what Eternity is. But I think Elizabeth Olsen is so charming. She steals the screen whenever she's on. She's just delightful to watch. But it's got some really interesting moral dilemmas, right? You've got to pick. You've got to pick the person that you're going to spend eternity with. And that's it. And it's cute because she had a husband before and then he passed away and then she married someone else and that's who she had her life with. But in the afterlife, you have to choose who you're going to have eternity with, your first husband or the one that you were married to just now. And again, it just sets up that whole premise of like, what obligations do you have and what is love and do you cherish the idea of what you had before or what you currently had in some ways and the implications of that. And it's a beautiful moral dilemma.
It's a great moral dilemma. And I loved the plot for the movie because essentially she has died and she's gone to the afterlife. Her husband has just died. Like maybe, I don't know, it doesn't say exactly, maybe a month ago. And he's been waiting for her and he's almost ready to go to, anyway, I don't want to give away spoilers. Yeah. But then he finds out her first husband has been waiting for her for 67 years.
Wow.
Right? So then now she's here in the afterlife, and you get a chance for only one eternity, right? You choose one eternity and who you want to spend it with. And do you pick, you know, do you...
Exactly what I just said,
wrong.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly what you said.
Yeah. She's done nothing wrong.
Done nothing wrong. Oddly, the movie it reminded me of, which you guys are going to laugh about, is The Materialists. Because
really?
Dakota Johnson has the same issue. Like, do you... Do you go with the person who makes you crazy, but with whom you have, you know... This
amazing
wonderful,
chemistry.
Amazing chemistry, or do you go with the safe person? And, you know, so it reminded me of that a lot. The part which didn't work for me is, listen, I'm an Elizabeth Olsen stan, right? I mean, I've loved her from the first movie. She was in Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene.
Yeah.
I think she's wasted in the Marvel universe and she needs better opportunities. She can really bring things home. But I never really bought her chemistry with either of the two men. It felt like in a romantic comedy, both you should feel her heartache. And the chemistry just was. And I think that's the piece which is missing. And also, whoever has done her wardrobe, she looks like a grandma the whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, she really looks like she's wearing clothes from the 50s. Like,
well, I think that was the idea, right? Because you kind of appear as
a version of herself,
younger version of herself.
But her wardrobe wasn't doing her any favors. But I think outside of that, I love the moral dilemma of the movie, right? Because you could justify either one. And, you know, how exactly like you said, Joe, she has not done anything wrong. And everybody's like, you make a decision, pick this guy or pick this guy. So it's
and it is funny. It's very funny. I'm trying to think of the movie. I'm just looking.
I remember hearing of that show. I think it was on HBO.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think about what was the movie it most reminded me of, Yazdi, and I don't know why. Mm. Was the one with Matt Damon where they all go miniature?
Oh, Shrinking.
It wasn't Shrinking.
Yeah, yeah. Downsizing.
Downsizing.
Yeah.
Downsized or whatever it was.
Downsizing,
For some reason it had
that kind of feeling
to me, right? I don't know why.
Yeah.
But it's very funny. I'll give it a score. I really like this movie. I would give it... I want to...
Give it an 8.
I'm trying not to say a 7.5, which I would back down to a 7.
Yeah, for me...
Is that the same for you?
Yeah, for me it's a 7.5. Which I would back down to 7. Look, this movie is obviously has a very low budget, right? It's a smallish movie. None of the actors are very well known other than Elizabeth Olsen. And I like that very limited funding they have. The visual look of the afterlife was really cute. It felt like a train station mixed in with a hotel.
Cute. Yeah,
there were some clearly AI kind of landscapes there, but... It was used very tongue-in-cheek, right?
Very
that
funny.
That it's so bureaucratic, right? Like when you show up dead, you're like, where am I? What's going on? And they're like, just wait a minute. You know, your person... your coordinator is going to come and explain it to you. You're like, I just died.
And then it gives you brochures and you have to pick where you're going to go. And it's very funny.
It was very funny. With the limited budget they have, I think they've done something pretty remarkable. Yeah. 7.5 out of 10, which I'll back down to 7. I wish there was more chemistry between the three actors,
are
all individually excellent. And I've never seen that Calum Turner before.
Yes, he's. I feel like he was in...
He was in some television show, I think, no? Yeah, but yeah, they're all very capable. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Final movie of the week then is Jay Kelly.
So Jay Kelly will be introduced by me and director Noah Baumbach, who is, I guess, in real life... married or with Greta Gerwig. He has made some amazing movies. He did The Squid and the Whale. He did Marriage Story. He did White Noise. He was a writer on Barbie.
Frances Ha.
Frances Ha was the wonderful movie he did. He also did the other movie with Greta Gerwig, which was so good. But anyway, he's a well-known writer, director. You know, he's been around for a long time. And this is his latest movie. It is based on a story which was written by Noah Baumbach and Emily Mortimer. Now, Emily Mortimer has been a delightful actress who's been around for a long time. I did not know that she wrote, but the two of them have collaborated. Emily Mortimer is in the movie. She has a very small role, and I remember Emily Mortimer because she was originally in a movie called Lovely and Amazing, and she was truly lovely and amazing in it. But the two of them are writers on the movie, and the star cast for this movie is pretty remarkable. George Clooney plays the lead the lead, Jay Kelly. Adam Sandler is here. Laura Dern is here. And Billy Crudup, Jim Broadbent, Stacey Keach. Patrick Wilson, who we like a lot, is here as well. And as is Emily Mortimer.
Put your teeth back in, Yancy.
So I think this movie is somewhere between a send-up and a sentimental look at a person who has everything, but kind of realizes that it maybe he doesn't have everything where it counts. And that particular character is portrayed by a very skinny George Clooney, who plays famous movie actor Jay Kelly, who embarks on a journey of self-discovery, confronting his past and present with his devoted manager, Ron, played by Adam Sandler. It's supposed to be poignant and humor-filled and pitched at the intersection of regrets and glories. Boy, who wrote this one for IMDb? But anyway, it's about this movie actor who's kind of having a reckoning. So what did you guys think of Jay Kelly? By the way, Jay Kelly will be in theaters for a couple of weeks and then it drops on Netflix. So everybody with Netflix account can watch it starting, I believe, December 8th or 9th. Yes.
Joe.
So once again, we find Noah Baumbach clearly auditioning for his role as the replacement Woody Allen. And he's done has been heading more and more and more in that direction.
Yeah.
And here it was to me like very signposted that this is what he wanted to create. I'm not a huge fan of Allen as maybe you guys are. I mean, I love the selected Woody Allen films are among my favorite films of all time, but I'm not a completist. I'm not a... So, look, I mean, this movie is so bogged down in its own, like, sense of grandeur and self-importance, and the performances of everyone. It was all too much. They had too much money. They went on a great vacation to Europe. They all worked hard. Everyone's earnest here. But this didn't come together for me at all. I didn't buy any of it. I mean, there's a preposterous scene of heroic rescue in the middle of the movie that I was just rolling my eyes. So the whole thing was just irritating, frustrating, boring, frankly. And
boring.
So, no, absolutely. And it reminded me of the horrible sequel to A Simple Favor that we saw earlier this year, where, where, you know, you just have this. You remember the one with Blake Lively?
I was in that
European vacation mode. So this movie is just overly self-indulgent. Baumbach needs to dial himself back. I feel like this is happening to so many directors at the moment, where they're becoming, like you say, Yazdi, they're becoming, you know, self-parodying in some way. And that, so I didn't care for this at all.
I'm with Joe. For me, the issue was this is two movies that are tonally opposite, right? There is this funny movie about someone who is so out of touch with reality, trying to bring himself into reality, right? This amazing film star who's so far away from being part of today's culture, being part of every man. And there's some really funny humor in that. And then there's this very... you know, wistful, self-reflecting, regretful man who's kind of looking at his life and looking at his children and trying to kind of make sense of all of that. And the two never seem to come together. They're literally two separate movies. And then Adam Sandler, who is exquisite in this movie, is in a completely different movie. The movie I want to watch is the movie of the relationship between Laura Dern and Adam Sandler. So it just feels very disparate pieces that never quite spin themselves into something that you can hang on to. Each of the pieces is okay to watch, but it's so self-indulgent and you know, it's like when you go to a party and you wear the long sequin dress with all of the jewelry you own, with a fur coat, with the highest heels that you have, and your makeup is fully done and your hair's done, and let's just throw on some long gloves as well.
Yeah, I didn't love this film, but I didn't hate it either.
Yeah.
I can understand what he's trying to do. I think this movie is supposed to be initially a send-up of The Entitled, right? The people who have so much that they've completely lost touch with you know, yeah. what is real and what is not.
Sure.
And all of their fame and success is actually of zero value because they don't have, you know, the good relationships with either family or friends or others, which what really counts. I think that's kind of meant to be the underlying message of the movie. But I think at about the halfway mark, it says, even though we've been making fun of this man, now we want you to kind of feel sorry for him.
Yeah.
And feel kind of, you know, feel a little sympathy for him. And I mean, it didn't not work for me. It worked for me, but this movie should have been heartfelt and devastating, and it should kind of pushed all your emotional buttons. It didn't push any of my emotional buttons.
No.
I fully agree that the star in this movie here is Adam Sandler, because Adam Sandler usually is so much Adam Sandler. That's what he gets hired to do. And here he's very restrained. And I really, like you, I was very fascinated about, because we never see this in movies, about somebody, and it doesn't have to be assistant to a film star. It could be assistant to the CEO of a company, or it could be somebody's, you know, secretary at work who has just devoted themselves to taking care of this person. And that person is just not aware of what sacrifices that person is making. So that part I really, really liked. Clearly, Noah Baumbach, I agree, is influenced by, you know, all of his movies are about neurotic men or neurotic people. And clearly, you know, Woody Allen is an influence. But I think the movie he's really influenced by is the movie 8 and a Half, you know, which was about a film director who's kind of having, you know, this existential crisis. And, you know, he kind of is going through this again. So it seems a little bit of a lost opportunity to me, because it did not shake me, I think, the way its intention was. And I think, again, Greta Gerwig, by the way, is also in this movie in a very small role. She plays Adam Sandler's wife. It's a throwaway part. But again, it reminds me that off recent, a lot of Noah Baumbach's collaborations with Greta Gerwig has improved his writing, because, you know, when he's writing by himself, maybe he's not as trenchant and as perceptive.
God, so imagine what this would have been if Greta Gerwig didn't have her hands on it, right? You know, I mean, so it's kind of, I can't tell if it's undercooked or overcooked. It's kind of one of those...
Too many ingredients.
I think, yeah. And again, I think that was my analogy for, like, when you go out and you're just... Even though you're wearing too much, I couldn't tell. Writing like it needed more of something, or it needed something taken out.
Too many ingredients for me. I think just, this has got too many elements thrown in, too many facets of each of the characters that they're trying to explore. And so everyone kind of comes across as kind of fragmented and unbelievable. You know, the Clooney character with all of his arrogance, and then he's trying to get with his daughter, and the whole thing just becomes this frustrating mess of like half explored ideas, because there's too much in this movie. Like, take something out.
Yeah, and I just feel like we couldn't care enough. I didn't care what happened to him.
Yeah, I
cared about the Adam Sandler character.
Yes.
I cared about Laura Dern.
Yes.
I mean, oddly, I think, again, I'm not a champion for this movie, but since you both are so negative, I think this movie is actually a much better version of a movie we saw earlier, just a few months ago, which was The Big Beautiful Journey with Margot Robbie and Ferrell, which also did this thing where this character kind of loops back into earlier parts of his life. Like literally he opens a door and goes into like when he was a high school kid or whatever.
That's good. Yeah.
So this movie does a lot of that with flashbacks, but I think it's a little bit better. I think this movie is, because I think Baumbach is Baumbach. He cannot write bad dialogue. There is some really good, funny dialogue, and the individual pieces did work for me. But I agree, when you put it all together as somehow this coming together of a conscience within this man who realizes even though he has everything, he has nothing. Maybe it needed to be in the oven a little bit longer. It doesn't, it doesn't come out fully baked.
Yeah. I mean, I can sum this one up. Not a complete waste of time. I would say save this for when you're on a long journey in the back of an airplane. For me, this is probably about a 4 out of 10.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's kind of a little bit below average.
For me, it's very well written. It's kind of fun. They're clearly having a great time gallivanting around Europe.
Sure.
And so it's fun. It's kind of almost a travelogue. I think Clooney does his best. I think all the actors are doing their best. I just wanted this to be a tighter film, and it should have been more emotionally devastating. 6.5 out of 10, which I'll...
Joe. Yeah, I'm going to be hard on this because it annoyed me, and I think it's overly... It has so many good things going for it in terms of the talent that's working here, the director and writer included, that I feel like you need a little bit of a slap, Noah Baumbach, you know, and that will come from me because I will educate you. Now, I mean, who am I to kind of criticize his filmmaking other than it just didn't work as a film for me. And I think, you know, when you have all of this at your disposal, you know, I feel like do better.
It's an amazing cast.
Do better. Better. Like, put, you know, understand where you may have overcooked it. I feel like it's just overly done. So frustrating.
The one thing I absolutely loved about the movie was the music. The music is by Nicholas Britell, who's done amazing scores for other movies, including If Beale Street Could Talk, etc. So the music was great. The only other thing I want to mention is it's hard to do movies about movies, right? Or movies about actors or movies about directors. But, you know, I don't know if you're going to officially review this movie, but there's a movie playing right now, a Norwegian movie called Sentimental Value. And that movie is also about a director who is kind of Wayne.
It's a reckoning.
And it's a reckoning. And that movie, with much less time and with so much less frill, that whole reckoning comes through so beautifully. Stellan Skarsgård plays this director who has chosen art over his family, and that this is the same concept as this movie.
Yes.
And by the way, I'm not making this connection. I heard the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, and they made this connection between the two movies, and they're like, Sentimental Value has done this so much better with fewer resources and with better writing than this movie.
I mean, clearly, we haven't reviewed it. We may not get to review it, but Sentimental Value is one of the best movies of the year.
Agree.
Yeah, and so, we should review it maybe at some point.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be on our top lists, three of us.
And no, but you're right. The similarities are right there on show. And again, I think you can see Sentimental Value has a lot of things taken out of it. It's often what's not said in that movie that brings the movie up. This is just too talky and boring.
Yes.
Wind it up.
All right. Here endeth the podcast then. Thank you again for listening to us ramble on about these movies. We hope you do get a chance to see some of them. We've got more podcasts coming soon, with not least of which reviews of Marty Supreme and The Testament of
Anne Lee.
Thank you. Sorry, it was cut off on my screen here. I couldn't read it. So do watch out for a podcast coming to you in the not too distant future. Until then, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.